You love sports, but maybe you don't know how to get your foot in the door for the sports career you've always dreamed of. This is a subject we talk a lot about on this podcast. You've filled out resumes, but maybe you haven't had any callbacks, which makes you feel frustrated, a little bit scared, kind of questioning your future, and you feel like this pressure is really mounting. I know this feeling really well because almost every single person I have interviewed in the sports industry has felt this feeling at some point. The first thing is to recognize you're not alone, and there's a really good option for you. The Master in Sports Business Leadership program at Seattle University helps you develop the business skills that will set you apart. You'll also gain the work experiences you'll need and get connected with sports industry professionals from your first class through your last in their unique leadership and professional development courses. Leadership is a trait that employers really want, that soft skill that can separate you from the competition. In the Seattle University program, you'll learn the business acumen you need to thrive, along with the leadership skills to reach the highest point of your career. Plus, Seattle is a thriving sports community. I should know, I lived there for 10 years and I loved that area. Great city, not just incredible sports and great fans, really, really good food. I mean, really good food. You like seafood, fresh fish? Does not get any better. Seattle University's Sports Business Leadership program is right in the middle of it all. Email our friends at Seattle University to get more information at msbl@seattleu.edu. That's MSBL, which stands for Master in Sports Business Leadership, MSBL, see, at seattleu.edu, or you can call them at 206-398-4610 to learn more about how they can help you work in sport and follow your passion.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition,
liftoff. Hi everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. Big thanks to Seattle University, our first sponsor for the Work in Sports Podcast, and a really great program. But let's jump into today. So, who do you want to be? Some of you listening may have figured that out. You have a clear vision for yourself and can see how your future in the sports industry will develop. Others, the picture may be a little bit foggy. You have some rough ideas and are working towards clarity. Or maybe you have no clue. You just know your future is connected to sports. That decision is very daunting. Who do you want to be? It's a big question, right? And even after you've put all that work in and figured it out, all that work figuring out your goal, well, then you still have to figure out how to get there. Sounds pretty daunting, right? Well, it really doesn't have to be. You have tools at your disposal, free tools that you probably aren't even using to their fullest. Let's run through an example. Let's say I had it in my head that I wanted to be a sports reporter on TV. Awesome. I have my goal. That's often the hardest part. Now I can with ease go through the LinkedIn profiles of 20 sports anchors, sports reporters. I can see where they went to school, what they studied, where they found their first job, how long they took before their next job after that, where they went next, what awards they've won, how they grew, where their career went. I can go on YouTube and watch videos of them doing their job, maybe even find their demo reel that they send out for their applications to find a new job. I can do a simple Google search on their name and read their professional bio and learn even more. From this free information, I can create a step-by-step plan for myself to achieve my goal. And this isn't just for sports reporters. If you want to work in analytics or player development or public relations or become an athletic director, the information is out there if you are curious and creative in the way you search and discover. Now, mind you, this isn't just theory. This is something highly successful people do every single day. This week's guest is living proof. Lee DeLeon is Purdue University's, hold tight, he has a really long title. All right. Executive, Senior, Associate, Athletic Director, and Assistant Vice President of Development. That is a long title. Lee decided long ago that he wanted to be a Big Five Athletic Director. That was his goal. So he literally studied the path of those who came before him. Who are those Big Five Athletic Directors, and how did they get there? What's the blueprint? What can I follow? What can I learn? He looked right at the career arc of the Big Five Athletic Directors and identified the steps he needed to take. And it's worked. Lee earned his master's. He worked within the athletic department at LSU, University of Houston, University of Arizona, University of New Mexico, Abilene Christian, and now Purdue. He's closer now than ever to reaching his goal because at every one of those previous stops, he had specific things in mind he needed to get, he needed to learn and master. And after this conversation, I'm convinced we'll be reading a press release announcing him as a major college AD soon. There's a lot to take away from this interview, so let's get to it. Here's Lee DeLeon, Purdue University's Executive Senior Associate Athletic Director and Assistant Vice President of Development. Whew, I did it. Hey, Lee, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I am great. Thanks a lot for taking some time in season. I know things are never slow down on a college campus. But before we get into your role in major college athletics, let's go back to your early days in college. You completed your undergrad in business with an emphasis in marketing at Notre Dame and went right into your master's in sports management at Texas A&M. When and kind of why did you figure out you wanted to focus on a career path in sports rather than taking that early business degree, that undergrad business degree, and yeah, just going into a straight business role? What was it about sports that drew you in?
Great question. I wanted to be an athlete so badly in college. Tried out for the soccer team my freshman year, got cut. Tried out for the football team my sophomore year, got cut. And realized if I wanted to stay in college sports, it was going to have to be through my career, and I was not going to be good enough to play as an athlete. And so really early on, probably about sophomore, junior year of college, I realized that I want to do this for a living. And I remember the summer between my junior and senior year, I did an internship at Texas A&M in the athletic department, and I worked all summer and volunteered and didn't get paid a dime and spent, you know, 2-3 months down at College Station just grinding for free. And at the end of that, I was like, man, if I can do this and have so much fun for free, imagine if I could get paid. And so before I even started my senior year at Notre Dame, I had already filled out and turned in my application and taken the GRE for grad school and even been accepted before August of my senior year. And so I knew I was going straight into grad school. And for me, that was a perfect segue into the real world. I strongly encourage people, unless it's an MBA where usually you need experience to get in, if you're just looking to get a master's in sport management, go straight into it right after undergrad. That grad year, I did it in about 13 months. It was the best 13 months of my life. I had so much fun. It was a great segue between going from undergrad and prepping you for the real world, because, you know, you're taking less hours. The classes aren't as hard. You can work. So I worked in the sports marketing department at Texas A&M while I was in grad school for sport management. And it was just the perfect kind of segue from going to being a full-time student to be a full-time professional. And I strongly recommend it for those people considering it.
That's great advice. It does seem like in college athletics, a master's is almost seems like a requirement in a lot of ways. Yeah, it really is. And I think a lot of factors, a lot of areas in the sports industry, it may not be as much of a mandate, but in college athletics, you do agree it tends to be more of an expectation?
It's expected for sure. And, you know, but I think you don't do it if you're just going to be doing it full time. You need to get experience while you're in grad school. And so there's a lot of really good GA positions out there that will even pay for your grad school while you're working. And so try to find a job like that where you can gain experience simultaneously while you're getting that master's degree. But it is more the norm rather than the exception nowadays.
So you had some marketing background from when you got your undergrad and obviously did some
Correct.
Work on that in your sports marketing. You jumped right into major college sports. I mean, LSU is a pretty good starting point.
And then, to show you how competitive this industry was, so finished my undergrad at Notre Dame, getting my master's at Texas A&M, you're required to do an internship to complete your master's. And so I apply at several places all over the country. And that job that I got at LSU, which was a full-time paid internship to complete my master's, there were 300 applicants for that job.
Wow.
And it paid for 1 year, paid $15,000 before taxes, and you had no health insurance and no cell phone stipend. And there were 300 applicants for one job. And so fortunately, they picked me, and that was an awesome experience. And I loved every second of being at LSU. But then actually 3 months into the year-long internship, I was offered a full-time position in my hometown of Houston, Texas, that I just couldn't turn down. So
no,
I had a great time at LSU, but got right into the the full-time working world back at U of H in 2005, and I've been doing this ever since.
So many people in our audience are either searching for that first job or are in it and looking to advance in their career. Take us back to that University of Houston experience. What are kind of your biggest memories of that time and kind of learning your way through a college athletic program?
Oh my gosh, it was incredible. You know, it was the true definition of learning to swim by jumping into the deep end.
Right.
You know, I was 24 years old, had no idea what I was doing. I was hired as the assistant director of marketing, but the director of marketing position was open as well. And so I was really doing two jobs right off the bat. I was in senior staff meetings. I had a secretary and a staff to manage. It was crazy. But, man, I learned more in those 3 years there at U of H than I did probably any other time in my career. Just learning how to be a professional, how to be organized, how to manage your time, how to communicate with executives, how to be in a room with people that are 20, 30, 40 years older than you and hold your own. You know, I just really was drinking out of a fire hose. But at the same time, you know, I was just trying to be a sponge, trying to soak it all in, trying to learn as much as possible. I was really, really hungry. And at that time, that job was perfect for me because I was so ambitious and so motivated to learn and to grow. And man, it was such an incredible opportunity to be thrown into the fire at an early age and to learn how to manage the world of college athletics. And I'm kind of what you would call a student of the game. I love this industry, and it's all I've ever done and all I ever want to do. And so I encourage the people that are out there that as you're looking at jobs and as you're looking at opportunities, you know, you got to do the job and do it well, but have a big picture view of it as well so that you're understanding the entire operation, not just your small role that you start in, but that you're understanding, okay, what's the difference between an assistant AD and an associate AD? What's the difference between marketing and development? What's the difference between academics and compliance? What does it take to be an athletic director? What are their backgrounds? Where are they coming from? What are their skill sets that they bring to the table? What are presidents looking for in an AD? Who does an AD need to have strong relationships with? There's so many things that you can learn, and don't wait until you're, you know, 15 years into your career preparing for your first AD job to learn those things. Learn them when you're an intern. Learn them when you're entry level. You know, really take a global approach to your job and don't get bogged down in the minutiae, but really try to take a bigger look and think big picture and be a sponge and soak it all in.
That's such a great piece of advice. Since 2005, thinking big picture here again, since 2005, you've worked at six different universities.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. But, I mean, at the same point, is that a factor of you pursuing the right role for you? I mean, is that a personal choice, or is that just kind of normal in the world of college athletics where sometimes you have to move out to move up?
Yeah, you're exactly right. It is normal. And it sounds worse when you say it out loud. But, you know, I don't feel like I've been a job hopper. I don't feel like I've bounced around too much. Here's the deal. Over my career, with the exception of LSU, because that was an internship and I wasn't guaranteed a job after that, all of my full-time positions I've stayed in at least 3 years. And so I've taken a three-year approach each stop. In year one, again, you're drinking out of a fire hose. You're learning how to manage yourself and how to manage your job, how to manage your boss, how to manage your staff. It's a learning, growing period, year one. Year two, I call it the spaghetti year. It's like when you're cooking spaghetti and you throw it on the wall to see if it sticks, and if it sticks, it's ready, right?
Yeah.
And so you're just trying new things. You're putting your spin on it. You're trying new things. You're seeing if ideas that you throw on the wall stick. You're making mistakes. You're learning from them, and you're tweaking it. And then year three, you know what works. You know how to do your job. You know how to get things done, and you're doing it at a really high level. And in my experience, in year three, I've been able to have some success and move the needle that somebody else has come in and plucked me away and offered me another job, and I've been able to advance my career. So, you know, that's kind of how I viewed it. People nowadays, I think, are bouncing around a little too much. I think if you leave a place in less than 3 years, I don't know how you could feel good about that. To me, it just takes a while, especially in development when you're building relationships and you're having to establish trust and develop rapport with your donors. But yeah, I mean, yes, I have worked at several schools, LSU, Houston, Arizona, New Mexico, Abilene Christian, and now here at Purdue. And so I have been at a lot of different places, but each stop has been at least 3 years, with the exception of my internship at LSU.
I totally understand the loyalty perspective and that 3 year kind of window. I've worked in the industry for 20 years now, and I've only worked at three places. It's kind of funny.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I admire that.
Oh, thanks. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes maybe not. I don't know.
Sure.
You made a bit of a career shift from the marketing side to the fundraising
Correct.
And development side when you advanced from University of Houston to University of Arizona. What was the stimulus behind this career move? Why was that shift? Why did that shift take place, and what has that meant for your career?
So I'm going to use a church analogy, if you don't mind. You're in marketing, it's kind of like being the youth pastor. You know, you're kind of the young, crazy, energetic, zany, outside-the-box person that thinks of all the ideas and is always trying to come up with the latest, coolest, greatest, hippest thing, right? You're trying to be relevant and current, which is awesome, and there's a need for that. But nobody takes the youth pastor seriously. and the youth pastor never goes from being the youth pastor to being the head pastor. There's got to be something in between. And so at some point, you got to get out of youth ministry and get into adult ministry, and for people to really take you seriously and view you in a different light and make, you know, think of you as someone that has a pastor material. So for me, getting out of marketing into fundraising was like going from youth ministry into adult ministry. I had to learn how to be around VIPs, high-level CEO type of people, how to earn their trust, develop rapport with them, and be able to close gifts and generate dollars and really raise funds in a major way, getting 6-7-figure type of donations. That's what presidents are looking for. They want people that not only can market and promote their program, but people that can raise funds and work with high-level VIPs and be able to interact with people on that level. So to me, it was essential to do that. The other thing was, like I said, I'm a student of the game. I'm an absolute nerd about college athletics, and I was just reading bios every time somebody got an AD job, and every one of them was coming from development. Yep. You look at kind of the next big wave of ADs right now, Greg Byrne at Alabama, Ross Bjork at Ole Miss, Whit Babcock at Virginia Tech, Mark Harlan at Utah. These are all guys coming from development. And they've all moved up the ranks in fundraising. They were involved with NAD, and now they're the highest level of ADs in the country. And so there seemed to be a pattern that I was picking up on, and I wanted to be a part of that. And fortunately for me, it worked.
I love that philosophy of almost reverse engineering from your end goal. Like, I know I want to someday be an athletic director. So how did all these other athletic directors get to that point? What was their path? And you can apply that whether you want to be a sports anchor or whether you want to be a CEO or whatever it is. Find out that path and see what's worked. And I think it's genius that you've taken that and known that this was an important part of your development to be on the revenue creation side. Again, money speaks, and in every role, sales, whatever, that really does speak to the upper management if you're able to generate and bring in dollars. What would you say?
There's a book by Stephen Covey called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and one of those seven habits is begin with the end in mind.
Yes.
And so that's kind of what you're hitting on is, you know, I knew what the end goal was, and I was just from the get-go trying to make sure that the decisions that I made set me up to get to that spot.
It's so true. I've actually had my kids, same thing. I share that with my kids, so they think that way as well. It's something that should be ingrained very early on. What would you say are the skill sets that are most important to thrive in that role of fundraising and development? It's not a role that people necessarily prepare themselves for, or take classes in. Like, what are those skills that we really need to have to thrive in that world?
Great question. You know, I think the first skill is, and it took me a while to get to this point, it was not natural for me, because I like to talk and I like to communicate, but the first skill that you need in development is to be a good listener. You have to shut up, let the donor do the talking, take interest in them, ask good questions, be interested, not interesting, right? These donors, they don't really care about you. You know, they're giving because of the school and the program. And so you don't need to win them over with how cool you are, and how great you are, and how great your background is. You need to find out what their passions are, what they love, what gets them going, and you have to listen in order to be able to do that. And so I tell people fundraising is really simple. Don't overthink it, okay? It's two things. You have to match the donor's passions with your school's needs. And when you can match the donor's passions with your school's needs, it's a beautiful thing, and it's really easy, and it's really comfortable. You know, all these people are like, oh my gosh, I don't know how you ask people for money for a living. Well, when that happens, when you have a need and you have a donor that's passionate about that need, asking them for money is actually kind of fun. It's like, hey, we have this awesome opportunity where you can give to make this project happen. And the look on their faces, trust me, it's not painful at all. You know, yeah. We were trying to build a new video board at volleyball. And I went to lunch with this family that loves volleyball. I had no plans on asking them for money. This was actually only my second time ever meeting them. And we're at lunch and they're just telling me about volleyball and how much they love volleyball and how they turned a barn on their ranch into an indoor volleyball court. And they're showing me all these pictures. And by the end of lunch, I'm like, hey, I just shot in the dark here, but this morning I found out I need to raise, $450,000 for new video boards at our volleyball arena. And I know we just met, but would you guys have any interest in that? Would that be cool for you guys? Yeah. And man, their eyes lit up, and I told them, hey, we could actually put your name on the bottom of those scoreboards and it could say your family's name forever. And they were like, wow, yes, yeah, let's talk about that. Yes, really cool. Ask me for money, you know, but the only way that you get to that point is if you listen and pay attention to what they're passionate about, and then you find an opportunity that is something that your school needs, and really it's an easy, natural, comfortable, and even fun experience and process.
I bet. Up to this point of your career, you at this point after, you know, before you went to Abilene Christian, you had been a top dog, but not the top dog. Then that changed.
Correct.
You became the athletic director. You're the top guy at Abilene Christian in 2014. How different is it to go from being the master of one segment to being the master of all realms, including 16 Division I men's and women's teams? How different did things change for you?
Yeah, it was really hard, to be honest with you. Being an athletic director is very difficult. It is not for the faint of heart. And you have to be able to multitask. You have to be able to shift gears quickly. You have to be able to be knowledgeable about a lot of different areas. You have to know enough to be dangerous in so many different categories. And so, you know, in my past life as a marketing director or associate AD for development, you know, all my meetings that day were either about marketing or were either about development. And then you get to be an AD and every meeting is different. It's your compliance, it's academics, it's strength conditioning, it's sports medicine, it's, you know, budget, it's compliance, it's all these things. And you have to be able to shift gears really quickly. And you have to be able to know about a lot of different things and speak knowledgeably about a lot of different things. That was one thing that I was really shocked by was, you know, when you're the AD, you can't say, I don't know.
Right.
You know, you have to be able to say, you know what, this is what we're trying to do here. This is what's going on. You have to be able to have a pulse on the entire organization and be able to, again, know enough to be dangerous about every single aspect of your department. So that was really, really hard, but it was a lot of fun because every day was different. There was never a dull moment. You were always having to make decisions about different things, and there was so much variety in your job that it was a lot of fun. So the 3.5 years that I had at Abilene Christian were unbelievable. You know, being an AD was everything that I had hoped and dreamt it to be, and I had a lot of fun, and I learned a lot. But then after 3.5 years, I just kind of missed big time college athletics. You know, starting out my career at LSU, you know, I had kind of wanted to get back to that type of program with those types of fans and that type of passion and that type of those types of resources. And so it was hard to leave being an AD, but it was worth it to get back to a place like Purdue and like the Big Ten Conference, because ultimately my true desire from the get-go was to be a Power 5 athletic director. And so again, like we talked about earlier, begin with the end in mind. I thought in order for me to have the opportunity one day to be a Power 5 AD, I was going to have to leave Abilene Christian and get more experience at this level. And so hopefully it pays dividends. It was a risk because getting AD jobs is really hard, and I had a great one and I loved it. But I thought it was worth the risk to come back to the Power 5 level and to work at Purdue. And 6 months in, it's been awesome.
Yeah, so let's talk about Purdue. Big title at a big school, Executive Senior Associate Athletic Director, and there's an and in your title, Assistant VP for Development. So that's a lot. Describe to us all the major functions of your role now at a major institution like Purdue. I obviously can't tell us everything, but give us kind of the overarching theme of your role as an Executive Senior Associate Athletic Director and Assistant VP for Development. Whew, I nailed it.
Yeah, you did nail it. Thank you. It's a mouthful for sure. And basically, I'm in charge of fundraising for athletics, and I have a dual report to the deputy AD and AD in the athletic department, but also the vice president for development across campus. And so I have to really stay connected with the athletic department leadership and administration, but also connected with the university leadership that oversees fundraising for the whole school. And so that's why there's the two titles. The Executive Senior Associate AD is the athletics title, and the Assistant Vice President for Development is the university fundraising title. And so I'm actually housed in athletics all day, every day, but I'm employed by the University Development Office.
Okay.
And so they pay my salary and do my performance reviews and all that stuff. But my office is in the same building as all the other athletic department administrators. So it's an interesting mix. But it was like this at New Mexico as well when I was the associate AD. I had a dual report there. And so it's pretty natural, and it makes some sense, and it's able to work effectively. But my role in a nutshell is to help generate additional resources to better serve our student athletes. You know, one person said a long time ago when I started out as an AD, I heard this moniker, and it just really resonated with me. Our job as athletic directors is to provide the resources that match expectations. So if people expect you to win Big Ten conferences here at Purdue, conference championships here at Purdue, then we have to give them, our student athletes and our coaches, the resources to do that. And so we raise about $40 to $45 million a year here at Purdue. I have a staff of 16 that all day, every day is thinking about raising money for Purdue Athletics. We have 8,200 members of the John Purdue Club, our fundraising organization that we have to serve and make them feel special. We want to make them feel really good about the money that they decide to invest in our program. And so all day, every day, I'm thinking about ways to generate more resources to help our student athletes and coaches be more successful.
So you've been at major schools in major different conferences. You've held athletic director roles. You've been on senior staff. How different is the experience from school to school? Do the various programs follow the personality of the athletic director, or are they all relatively similar, just different in scale?
Great question, man. I would say the latter. They're all very similar, just different in scale. You know, at Abilene Christian, we had a $15 million budget. At Purdue, we have a $95 million budget. But at the end of the day, we're trying to do the same thing, which is provide a first-class student-athlete experience for our athletes and make sure that they are getting a great education and they're prepared for life after college and they're competing for championships. And so, you know, everybody's trying to do the same thing. It's just a different magnitude, you know, based on the resources that your school has. You know, University of Texas, Ohio State, their budget is almost twice the size of Purdue's. I mean, imagine that. You know, pretty soon, people are going to get over $200 million operating budgets. It's just crazy, the size and scope of what we do. But in the end, we're all trying to do the same thing, which is, you know, graduate student-athletes and win championships. And so there's a lot of commonality between every athletic department. the title structures are always the same. The different departments are always the same. It's just a matter of how many people are in each department and how many resources are devoted to each area. So, yeah, there's a lot of commonalities, and you can that's why you're able to go and work at several different schools to be a part of different places and not skip a beat, because in the end, we're all trying to accomplish the same thing.
We'll finish up with this because I know you have a busy day ahead of you, and I just appreciate the time you've given us. For a decade plus, you've been a leader of men and women in various roles, holding different responsibilities, different challenges. What are the most important attributes you look for when hiring and developing staff?
Oh, I read a book called The Ideal Team Player, and I thought that they summarized it really well. They said you got to hire people that are humble, hungry, and smart. And by smart, they're not talking book smart. They're talking people smart, you know, emotional intelligence. And so I thought that was a great way to put it. You know, you want to hire people that are humble. They're good team players. They don't think of themselves too highly. They don't put themselves on a pedestal. But that they're humble and they are eager to learn and eager to grow and eager to develop. They have a growth mindset where they're always looking at ways that they can improve and get better. And so, you know, that's definitely something that you look for. They're hungry, meaning that they work hard, that they are a sponge, they soak it all in, and they have a desire and a passion for excellence and to improve and to grow and get better. I think that that's another characteristic and quality to look for. And the last thing is that they're smart and they're people smart, that they know how to be on the team and interact with others and play nice in the sandbox. They're easy to get along with. They're fun to be around. You know, we've all had teammates, whether it's in a sport or in a working capacity, that are really difficult and frustrating and hard to be around. And so you want to find people that you can enjoy going to work with every day, that you can enjoy being around. You know, you spend so much time at the office and in your careers, you might as well do it with people that you enjoy. And so I remember when I got the AD job at Abilene Christian, I asked the president there, hey, why did you hire me? I was young, I was unqualified, probably underprepared. What made you decide to hire me? And he said, honestly, Lee, I liked you. And so my closing advice for the people out there that are starting out their careers and that are getting into the industry and that are interviewing for jobs, be likable. Show your personality. You know, make sure you smile, crack jokes, be yourself. Be comfortable in that setting, because none of us want to hire stiff, robotic people. You know, we want to hire people that we enjoy being around and that we like hanging out with and we like going to war with every day. And that's what's going to get you jobs.
Lee, thank you so much for jumping on the show today. Incredible advice. I really appreciate the time you've given us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me and have a great day.
There are so many parts I loved about this interview. Obviously, Lee's vision to reverse engineer his career path, to look at the people holding the job he wanted and figure out how they got there. I love this proactive planning. Also, his step to development and understanding that role was about listening and aligning with the donor's passions. So smart. I really appreciate Lee taking the time out of his schedule to be with us and share so much knowledge. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, Facebook Live session Thursday nights, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. I'll have a theme, and then I'll open it up to all of your sports career-focused questions live from the Work in Sports Facebook page. So make sure to check that out and join me. It's a lot of fun. Thanks again to Lee DeLeon, and thanks to you for listening.